Today we're going to talk about diabetes burnout and how managing our expectations can help meet that challenge.
You're listening to Adventure RX, an active prescription for the non-compliant.
Welcome to episode 44 of the Adventure RX podcast. I'm your host, Steve Reichert, and on this show, we are creating a new normal in life with type 1 diabetes through inspiration, information, and adventure. We are empowering the community to go out and to do more and to live beyond the limits of this medical condition. And if you want to see more of our work, including our social media channels that are very active, populated with a lot of photos and information about climbing, hiking, being outdoors, the low-carb, high-fat diet that I follow, and our films and lots more, visit livingvertical.org. We have a couple of short films, a documentary. We have a YouTube channel where I am vlogging about my adventure as I live personally on the road in a tiny trailer because I have found that being outside, being active, traveling, living an adventurous lifestyle is a really integral component for my health and my management of type 1 diabetes. The Adventure RX podcast is a production of ReichertMedia.com, and that is my freelance media production company where I do podcast production, I do video creation, photography, as well as social media branding consultancy and strategizing to help small business owners who maybe don't have the time or the desire or the know-how to really get their name out there through content-based marketing, help them take their business to the next level. So if you're interested in that, visit ReichertMedia.com. If you know somebody who could use our services, ReichertMedia.com. And that is how I support the Living Vertical podcast, is through the work that I do with Reichert Media. And again, to find links to Reichert Media and to the music that we use and some of the stuff that we're going to be talking about in today's episode, if you visit livingvertical.org/blog, you can find this podcast episode and our show notes linked in there so that you have a little bit more of a tangible connection so that you don't forget to go and follow up on some of this stuff later. Make sure to visit livingvertical.org. So as we're getting into the show today, I want to just touch on something really briefly. At the time that you're going to be listening to this, we will be in Joshua Tree having our Adventure RX meetup in Joshua Tree National Park. It's a free meetup for everybody who's attending. And certainly if you follow us on social media, you'll be able to get a little bit more of a sense of the play-by-play, what we're doing, what's happening out there. But as we are traveling around the country, we are trying to organize meetups of people with type 1 just to get outside, get active, and to support each other in, like I said earlier, a new normal for life with type 1 diabetes, because having community around our activity and our struggle of with type 1 diabetes definitely is useful, and we want to form community around the idea of being empowered and getting outside together, and that simple prescription that can and should be part of our management plan across the board, that that's a free thing and that we can all do that together. So just want to promote the concept of having a meetup, because this meetup that is happening at the time that this episode launches, this meetup is something that we want to replicate in many different places for free. And if that's something you're interested in, make sure to shoot us an email, steve@livingvertical.org. Let us know where you are, where you would like to have a meetup, and we can work together to bring that together and to make that happen, and maybe find people in your area that you didn't know, where you can come away from that experience with better support system that is going to empower you to get outside and to do more. Additionally, I want to mention that this podcast, there's going to be a slight change to the way it has run in 2015. Because in 2015, we were able to put out content on a weekly basis. And that was because I was living in a house where I had studio space and I had a lot of free time. And as you may know, if you follow the blog and the YouTube channel, I'm living in a tiny trailer And it's one room that is about the size of a medium-sized bathroom in most houses. And that's where my wife and I and our almost two-year-old daughter are living, in addition to climbing gear, camera gear, whatever audio gear I have, computer stuff. And it takes a lot of logistical effort to create content on the road. And so I don't want to abandon the podcast. I don't want to say that I'm not going to be doing it, but I want you to understand, as my listeners, as subscribers to this podcast, to understand that, number one, that it may not come out every single week, because the ability to create a podcast takes time and space, and I have much less time and space now in this living arrangement. And also that the style of podcast is probably going to change a little bit, because up till this point, or at least in 2015, if you've been subscribed for a while, if you've listened to back episodes, you've heard me go through some experimentation with different formats, some that are a little bit more production heavy, where I'm incorporating different interviews and different audio and kind of really making it pretty. And then some where it was just kind of like me sitting down and having a talk. And part of the thing is that in 2015, I had a lot more flexibility and space to be able to experiment and explore and do more production heavy type of podcast episodes. And moving forward in 2016, I felt like I had to make the choice between either not doing podcast episodes or doing them very, very, very infrequently, and simply changing the style of the podcast to something that's a little bit more plain, that doesn't have all the bells and whistles, but that is like a short monologue or lecture or interview in some cases. And so the production level might go down a little bit, because instead of having a studio environment to record in, I'm going to be recording kind of out in the field more. So that's something I want to make you aware of, so that you understand kind of what is going on here internally with the content creation that we have, and so that there aren't any surprises. Okay, so now that we've got that all wrapped up, let's get into the show. And today we are going to talk about some of the psychological, metaphysical components of diabetes. And I love talking about this stuff, because it's something that really, in my mind, highlights the relationship between adventure, climbing specifically, and the value that those activities bring with the physical component of diabetes, and kind of looking at how the physical and the mental components of everything that we do, but specifically diabetes, how that really interacts in our life. So the idea for this podcast episode actually is growing out of a blog and a video that I wrote, which are about the concept of influence versus control. And I'm going to tell you a story a little bit later in the episode about the climb that I was on a couple of weeks ago that really highlighted to me the importance of knowing the difference between control and influence, and being able to really adjust my expectations accordingly, and how important that can be. In other words, the way we go into a situation, or the way we are looking at something, how our perspective makes such a big impact on the outcome and what we take away from it. And so this really started to come home in a diabetes sense to me just a couple of days ago, when I was on Twitter and there was conversation going on between a couple of folks about, you know, the value or the importance of the words that we use in relationship to our diabetes and our blood sugar management, and the whole, you know, this is a bad blood sugar because it's over 200 versus there is no such thing as a bad blood sugar because it's just a number, and we need to detach ourselves and look at it as unemotionally as possible, so that we're not reacting to our diabetes. Of course, I chimed in on the conversation somewhere in between those two perspectives, saying that for me, I know that the number itself isn't bad, but when I say, you know, that was a bad blood sugar reading, The bad that I'm really referring to is the way that that number makes me feel emotionally. So I'm not saying that that number is bad, and if your blood sugar is 200, that you're bad too. I'm saying that effectively, you know, in a very abbreviated sense, that when my blood sugar is 200, I feel bad. Therefore, this is a bad blood sugar. Okay. So all of that discussion about sort of the semantics and how our perspective involves our diabetes and impacts our diabetes kind of has started to coalesce with this concept of influence and control. And I started to think about diabetes burnout and the depression that so often goes along with having diabetes. And I started to think to myself, you know, how much of what we are doing within our own diabetes, how much of that can we actually control? And the answer that I have come up with is that really very little. And from the outset of our diagnosis, we are told, in some cases threatened, with complications and death and all sorts of other horrible outcomes, that we have to maintain control. And so we go into this experience as a diagnosis, we go into this with an expectation of having control. And that's an unachievable target. We're given a target that we can never hit, because if we could control diabetes, we would control it by saying, go away, diabetes, and diabetes would say, okay, see you later. It would go away, and then we would be in control because it would have gone away. The very simple and obvious fact that that little scenario is logically impossible should establish that we cannot control it. Now, here's where we get into some of the semantics, because when I say that we can't control our diabetes, I absolutely am not taking the position that we should throw our hands up and say, nothing works, it's impossible, it's hopeless, because I see a lot of that on social media. And the fact that that is so prevalent, especially I feel like in younger people that I see on Instagram or on Snapchat that feel very depressed about their diabetes, it's because they have a feeling that they can't do anything right and that nothing is going to work. And I don't agree with that conclusion, and here's why. I think that control is something that is outside of the realm of possibility. But influence is something that is very much within our ability to have. And if we go into our diagnosis or we go into a situation with an expectation of having control, and then we hit this wall where we realize we cannot control our diabetes, the natural reaction from that is to give up, because we aren't thinking in terms of like, okay, well, if we don't have control, then maybe I can scale back to influence and I can really hammer on having influence over my diabetes and my health and really capitalize on that, even though I can't have control, right? We don't tend to think of it that way. It's like, we're going for control. That's what we're told. That's what we have our energy and our mind and our heart set on. And we try to do our best and we count the carbs and all that stuff. And then you don't have control. And then it's just like, well, the hell with this. Nothing works. And being so fixated on having control causes us to lose sight of the tools that we can use to influence our diabetes. Now, when we talk about influence and our health and our diabetes, it's not a immediate gratification. It's not something that happens instantly. It's more like a long-term retirement account where you put in and you put in and you put in over the years. And sometimes that account grows, sometimes it shrinks, and it goes back and forth, but you don't focus on that. You don't watch and check the balance every day. You just keep investing and keep putting in because you know that in the end, you're going to come out ahead of where you would be if you didn't invest. That's the way I look at influencing our health as opposed to controlling blood sugar. Now, one of the other things that I think is a big contributor in diabetes burnout is looking at health as just our blood sugar. When we only hyperfocus on our blood sugar, it makes us so tied to the outcomes on a moment-to-moment basis that we're constantly taking this roller coaster ride and getting bounced all over the place, and it makes us unable to see the other areas of our health that we're investing in that are growing. back to the retirement portfolio analogy, right? If we have, and this is not in any way a accurate representation of how retirement portfolios work, and I'm not an economist or an investor really, but let's say we have half of our stocks in airlines and half of our stocks in pharmaceuticals. And let's say airlines are taking a beating because the price of oil is so high and pharmaceuticals are skyrocketing, right? That half of our portfolio is doing great because Eli Lilly is jacking the prices up on us. And so those part of our portfolios are doing, going gangbusters. But we're not looking at anything except the part of our portfolio that is going down and getting slammed. And so we're depressed, we're upset because we feel like our investment is not paying off and it's not worthwhile, but we're not stepping back to look at the big picture to realize that there's more to our investment than just the one stock that is tanking. There's a much bigger picture. And I think it's important for us to step back and look at our health as something that is a larger ecosystem than just blood sugar. Certainly blood sugar is a big part of that, and we want to control our blood sugar, or we want to influence. Like it's a habit, right? We want to influence our blood sugar so that it in turn contributes to good health. But you're not going to be healthier if you're so hyper-focused on controlling your blood sugar that you can't do anything else. And I think that's an important point that needs to be made, that it's not just about staying in a safe little lockdown environment where we can just watch our CGM and constantly take insulin, but that we should be striving for being powerful, being active, and contributing to the broad portfolio of things that make us healthier as people. And in a way, having diabetes is a gift from an analytical standpoint, because we have data that tells us about an entire metric in such great depth that nobody else has ever had in the history of humankind, with the exception of maybe blood pressure. You know, people do in some cases measure their blood pressure at home a lot. I know my dad, like, he takes his blood pressure like 4 or 5 times a day. But like, take cholesterol, for example. You get it checked once every 3 months, and that's all you know about that. And everybody is operating with Stone Age information, relatively speaking, you know, compared to what we enjoy with a CGM, or even being able to do multiple finger sticks in a day. That's still so far ahead of where diabetes was, let's say, in the 1940s, where, you know, you'd get your finger stick done once every couple of months when you went to the doctors, and that was that. And one of the things that I've seen a lot on social media is people who are burnt out are unable to appreciate or make use of the tools that we have that can help make us healthier. They won't make us in perfect control of our blood sugar, because that is not a real thing if you have a type 1 diabetes, right? That's not going to happen. But the expectation of control is what leads people to give up on the tools that they can effectively use. And I'm talking about diet, exercise, and activity. And one point that I think is worth mentioning here is that the type 1 community, oftentimes when you talk about diet and exercise, put up this wall and say, I'm not type 2, I don't want to hear it, it's not my fault, stop blaming me. And there's that defensive reaction that occurs immediately. Now, there certainly is a portion of the type 1 community that embraces diet and exercise because we have realized how much better off we can be than just trying to chase our blood sugars around and using that as our only lifeline to survival, but that we're way better off if we go above and beyond that and say, I'm not going to try to just be healthy for someone who has diabetes. I'm going to just be healthy, period, because I can, and make that long-term investment in health instead of the short-term, you know, hyper-focus on blood sugar ups and downs. And diet is something that I've talked about, I've blogged about. Actually, if you Google ketogenic diet and type 1 diabetes, you will see that livingvertical.org is the first thing that pops up in there. And I'm happy that I got ranked there to talk about the ketogenic diet. And that diet has done really well by me. And in previous episodes on the podcast, I talked about the importance of finding the right diet for you, because I am not selling the ketogenic diet. I'm not making any money, or I don't benefit from my advocacy in terms of that diet, I just want other people to have the same level of comfort in managing their blood sugar that I have enjoyed since I adopted that diet. And just to be clear, I don't think that that is the only diet where you can enjoy good results on. I know people that are thriving on a vegan diet, for example. But the bottom line is, regardless where you go on the dietary spectrum, if you go high carb to low carb or somewhere in between, that really taking the time to understand that it does matter and that you can find something better than being afraid of your diabetes constantly and highs and lows, that there is a better alternative and that you can influence that. You can't make highs and lows go away, but you can certainly help them by using that tool that you have available. So don't give up on a diet because you haven't found something that works. There is still value in and an investment that you're making in your health by adhering to a specific diet and being mindful about what you eat and how much and when. And I was actually at a point where I was burnt out with eating low carb, and I realized that I needed to change things up. And this was back in last summer. So I went on a vegan diet. And it was good for me, not because I wound up staying on the vegan diet, because the vegan diet for me was not sustainable. It did not work the way that I wanted it to. And that's a whole another long story that I could talk about at a different time and that I've touched on in previous episodes. But it was good because it got me trying. It got me thinking and it got me experimenting and really paying attention to what I was eating and not just saying, eh, whatever, like this looks like, eh, that's about 20 carbs, eh, that's about 30 carbs, eh, that's about 3 units. You know, it got me much more precise and more focused. So I'm not saying like diet is something that is a catch-all or some like magic wand that you wave. It's about getting excited about trying something new. And that's just important that we're looking to optimize in that way and that we don't lose sight of that as a valuable tool. And of course, exercise and activity, some people count those as one thing. I lump them differently because I feel like exercise is usually more intense and it is more targeted. And that's a great thing. Like that's what I try to do when I'm climbing and when I'm training for climbing. But activity is an additional category because it's more daily life. It's not targeted exercise. It's passive exercise. So living in a trailer, having to spend more time outside, and just simply having more movement built into my day increases my activity. And that's something that, you know, we have the ability to do, whether it means taking the stairs at work, walking to work, walking a little further at work, parking a little ways away. These are all little things that we can do that do make a difference. And again, it doesn't make your blood sugar go into control perfectly, but it is an investment in long-term health, undeniably. And if you're only focused on what my blood sugar says right now, you're going to miss out on the fact that you're actually helping yourself and you're improving your situation because you're not paying attention to the good stuff you're doing. You're only paying attention to the negative things that are going on in your blood sugar. So I want to take a minute and tell you about a little story. I was climbing a couple weeks ago, and this is where the whole thing about influence versus control really started to hit home to me, because it was like the light went on and I started to see a lot of parallels between what was happening to me in this climbing scenario and what was happening to me in life with my diabetes and what I see happening to so many other people, at least vicariously on social media, what I see happening to other people. And I want you to listen for the parallels between the climbing and the diabetes here, because I realize not everybody that listens to this podcast is a climber, and maybe not everybody who listens to this has diabetes either. So this is always fun for me because, you know, people ask, what does climbing and diabetes have to do with each other? And to me, they're like, tons. Like, how do you even have to ask that, right? Like, it's so obvious. But this is a great example of it. So I've spent a lot of time in Southwest Utah over the last 6 years. First came there in 2010. That's where I started working as a climbing and canyoneering guide. That was my first experience really facilitating adventures for other people, taking people from Illinois and Wisconsin and Washington and, you know, families that would come into town, wanted to experience rappelling and canyoneering and climbing, and they wanted to step into this world of adventure. And there was no medical component involved in these. Actually, we did have one family, I believe, where one of their little girls was type 1, and that was super cool. But it was just adventure in a very general sense most of the time. And that was where I realized how big of an impact adventure can have on people's lives, because I saw people's lives changed. There was one client that I went out with. It was a family, and the dad was quite overweight. He was obese. He was like 300 pounds and change. And he was going out there to support his daughter, because like his daughter, she was like high school aged, and she really wanted to do this. And you could tell he was one of those dads. He was a biker. I believe they were from Wisconsin, and, you know, big guy, real big guy, you know, and he was just, he really loved his daughter, really obvious that he cared about her and wanted to make her happy. And she was just kind of like pushing him to go and push himself on this adventure. So he was actually kind of reticent about doing this canyon with us. And this canyon involved some really tight squeezes through some narrow chambers and passageways. And it involved rappelling on like 8mm static rope. So this is something where if you're the biggest guy in the group and by a large margin, and you are not a small person, you're going to experience some challenge with this. And he did. And it was the first time where I really realized, you know, when we got him through that canyon, and really when I say we got him through, it was just everybody supporting him and being like, no, you can do this. Like, we're here for you. We got you. We're going to make sure you're okay. And we're going to do everything we can to help you achieve this success on this thing that you don't think that you're capable of doing. And it wasn't a big, huge day. Nobody would ever write about that in a magazine. It wasn't something that was spectacular, but the feeling of accomplishment that he had and watching his interactions with his daughter afterwards that they came away with, there's no question in my mind that that was a moment that, if not changed their lives, at the very least was something that they will talk about for 10 years, 20 years down the road, that will not be something that they forget anytime soon. And that was like a red letter day. So I got a little off topic there, or kind of went down a rabbit hole, but that was my first experience guiding and facilitating other people's adventures and seeing how much of a difference that could make. And it took me several years after that till I really understood how that same process had impacted me. And from that came Living Vertical and Project 365, the documentary, and some of the other stuff that we've done. But all the time that I had spent living in southern Utah, there's one climb that kind of had been taunting me for a while because it had an easy grade. It was not steep. It was not technically very hard, but I just had been putting it off because it was kind of intimidating. It was a long climb. It was a long ridge traverse, basically, with a lot of ups and downs, and not straight up the side of a wall, more along the backbone of a long mountain ridge just outside of town. It was called Cowboy Ridge, and I made a video about this on our YouTube channel, which you can check out at youtube.com/livingvertical. And finally, just a couple of weeks ago, since we were back with the trailer in Utah, that was our first stop, and I was talking to my buddy Chris, and I said, you know what, we should do this, and he's like, okay, let's do it Saturday. And suddenly, this thing that I had been building up in my mind, it went from being something that would happen someday and very imaginary to being very, very real. And I went into this day thinking that like with most things, like I tend to inflate the difficulty of most things. I think it's harder than it is in reality. And so when I finally get around to doing things that I'm afraid of, I usually find out that they're easier than I expected. So going into this climb, which we wound up doing on Valentine's Day a couple weeks ago, I was expecting it to be pretty casual because the grade of the climb is moderate. It is not very steep. It's just a long day, almost like if you look at it, you think, you know, there's a little couple of moves here and there, but it's mostly hiking. And that's true. But what I was not anticipating was factors that I could not control. And there were several of them, and they were very impactful things. One of the things that I couldn't control was where the route went and being able to find the route. Because when you look at something from far away, it's just like, oh yeah, you go up the left-hand skyline and you go to the summit and then you come back down. But when you get up closer to it, it's a huge puzzle and you can't see all of the pieces because you're so close to it. So from where we start at the beginning of the route, you can't see the end of the route and you can't sometimes see more than just a few moves ahead of you. And so in a lot of ways, it's like being in a maze. You can go up a certain way where you spy a weakness and you're able to make progress. You move up, move up, move up. And then you get to this dead end where, uh-oh, now we have to go all the way back and then take a different workaround to try to find the right way that continues on. And so there's a lot of this back and forth. And that was something I did not anticipate. I anticipated having control of the route and being able to say, here's where we go, like up, you know, and on steeper, more technically difficult routes, a lot of times that is more straightforward, even though it's harder to execute. On this route, I expected it to be easier, but it was hard to tell where we were going. Another thing is that the rock quality was so bad that my partner Chris and I, we couldn't climb right together, one in front of the other most of the time, because it was impossible to move without dislodging rocks, some of them huge rocks. And some of these rocks were right at the edge of precipices that would drop you 1,000, 1,500 feet to the ground. And so there was a lot of times when we were having to do moves that we couldn't protect with anchors and that were not hard moves, but we were doing these moves on rock that was so bad that parts of the handholds and footholds would come off in our hands, under our feet, and it made for some really gripping moments. And halfway, three quarters of the way through the route, when we were too far along to go back, and I wouldn't go back anyways because it was like I knew that this was something that I could do, but I was just really, really rattled psychologically. I was upset because I was out of control. I did not have control over the things that were challenging me in the situation because I thought, well, I'm strong enough to climb this route, so therefore I should be able to, you know, control the majority of the factors. And that was my expectation going in. In the days following, once we got down and, you know, finished safely, thankfully, I started thinking about this more. And that's when I began to realize that I went into this with the wrong expectation. I went into this thinking that it's about me, that I can do this, I can control this, and that I am involved in this larger backdrop of my natural settings to highlight what I am capable of and what I can accomplish. And in fact, it was really just the opposite. When you go into the mountains and you go into a climb that is that big, even if it's not technically difficult, you are dissolving into a bigger picture. You are not the center of the picture and the focus of the picture that the backdrop exists to highlight. It's the complete opposite way around. And in understanding that, it really unlocked some really important points in my mind. There was a few points on the route where psychologically I was really bothered by the fact that I did not have control. And there, you know, you get this feeling of panic where you kind of want to just curl up in a ball and be like, that's it, I don't want to play anymore. But you can't because you're on the side of a mountain and nobody's going to come and get you down. And the only way off is to finish. And I realize that that is the reaction that a lot of us have with regard to diabetes. We say, I can't control this. I've been told that I'm supposed to control this. I think that I'm in control going in. I find out that I'm not, and now I don't want to play anymore, and I'm just done. And it's very easy to see in a climbing context how detrimental that is. And I think it's harder to see how detrimental that is in a diabetes sense, because a lot of what is out there about diabetes burnout is more about commiseration and saying, hey, I feel you too. And less of it is about saying, look, here are some specific action steps that we can take to overcome this, because diabetes burnout is something that we should not settle for. That's the whole concept of what we're doing at Living Vertical, is creating a new normal where instead of saying, oh, being burnt out on diabetes, oh, it's no big deal, let's just pat each other on the back and it's okay to feel like shit all the time, we're saying, like, it's understandable. Now here, let's do something about it. Let's take action. Let's not neglect the tools that we do have to make investments in our health because of the fact that we are depressed, because we are all going to hit that bump in the road. Sometimes more often than not, we have times when we hit those bumps consistently, but we need to be inspired and we need to keep each other accountable to not give up and to not lose heart over a lack of control and give up our influence over our health. Okay, so that wraps up episode 44. I hope that you enjoyed this episode and this topic, the conversation. I would love for you to be part of that conversation. Reach out to me on Twitter at Living Vertical, or honestly via email or any other social media platform to connect with us, because the podcast is way better when it is a conversation instead of a monologue. Don't you agree? If you enjoyed the podcast, please make sure to subscribe through whatever portal you access this content. Make sure also to share this with your friends, because that is how we help get our message of empowerment out to more people. More people who are informed, active, inspired, and adventurous, pushing their limits. That is how we are going to create a new normal within diabetes. And I can't do that. Living Vertical can't do that. None of us alone can do that. But together, we are able to take actionable, concrete steps towards that goal. So please join me in creating this new normal within type 1 diabetes. Until next time, keep a focus on the big picture, invest in your health, and remember that diabetes is a choice that we get to make. It is not the removal of choices, it's the addition of choices, which does still, of course, make it a pain in the ass, but we have choices, and that's what we have to focus on in order to stay positive and to stay empowered and to keep from getting stuck permanently in ruts. Till next time, we'll see you right back here on the Adventure RX podcast. Losing our mind.